Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22 million.
Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written, and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was, my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven, the radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, before we go to the open mics today, we got a continuation from yesterday where we introduced the people, Taobao Villages, and that's spelled Taobao Villages, and that's spelled Taobao, one word, Taobao Villages. And exactly what is a Taobao village? Well, typically, Taobao villages are primarily in China. And they're small villages. And the village people, not the singing group, but the people that live in these villages are basically merchants or entrepreneurs. And they might make ties, shoes, socks, baseball mitts, some type of jewelry. Some might be farmers. But this village financially sustains itself on what the villagers who live there manufacture, make, produce, what have you. And then they sell it. There's a website, which is Taobao, which is one word, Taobao.com. And if you go to Taobao.com, that's Taobao.com, the site's going to pop up, and it's in the Mandarin language, Chinese. And but in order, what the Chinese wanted to do to prevent eBay from entering the China market, which is a big market, over 1.4 billion people, getting in there with their successful website, eBay, they say, you know what, let's set up a site, they call it Taobao.com, which is the Chinese equivalent to eBay. And Taobao.com is one of the, as far as revenue goes, as far as the type of platform it has, is one of the
largest websites as far as traffic and buying power on the internet. And Taobao villages started with one village, and they had two, then they had, you know, twenty villages, and then the next thing they had 500 or 600 villages. Now they've got over 5,000 or 6,000 Taobao villages throughout China. So we're basically, and in this country, the Amish and the Mennonite operate that way. I mean, the Amish and the Mennonite, they have their communities where they grow food, they sell it at their farmers markets, they have their own thrift stores, they have their own restaurants, in their entrepreneurial communities in their little villages. And they have maps of those, you know, throughout the United States. The Mennonites, they're global with theirs. So it's not a new concept, but the latest incarnation, Taobao villages, but they they sell a lot of their revenue from these small villages comes through online sales. And I gave out the statistic yesterday, globally, 33% of the global households are what is known as e-households or e-commerce households. And in the United States, 81% of the households in the United States are e-households or e-commerce households. I know I'm one of them. All right. So before we go to the phone lines here, and the name of my podcast is Earth Wealth E-Village. That's our place here in Florida. And E stands for Energy Village, though. And we'll explain that later. But Earth Wealth E-Village, but it's within, and well, it, as the title says today, Earth Wealth E-Village, which is an e-commerce village within Earth Wealth Forest. Little micro forest, only 4 acres big. Anyway, so we're going to go to the phone lines here as we play a few clips here about Taobao villages in China. And that, you know, like I say, they're deriving a lot of their revenue. And we're talking about all of them are in rural villages, every last one of them. And that's one of the things we talked about yesterday, rural e-commerce, big market rural e-commerce. Anyway, let's play this and then we'll go to the phone lines.
E-commerce develops rapidly in China. It demonstrates that the transition from physical to digital commerce, often perceived as a phenomenon of high-income countries, can happen in a country at a lower level of development as well. The World Bank and the Alibaba Group launched a joint research initiative to examine how China has harnessed digital technologies to aid growth and expand employment opportunities through e-commerce development in rural areas. Taobao villages are villages significantly engaged in e-commerce, with total annual e-commerce transaction volume of at least RMB 10 million, with at least 100 active online shops. The number of Taobao villages increased from 20 in 2013 to 1,311 in 2016 and to 2,118 in 2017. The World Bank Alibaba Joint Research Team, in collaboration with Peking University, conducted a survey in rural China covering 1,400 households and 80 Taobao villages significantly engaged in e-commerce. The analysis finds that rural areas with good infrastructure and good access to markets tend to be most conducive to e-commerce. More than half of people in Taobao villages use internet, People with higher education are more likely to use internet, particularly for work and learning-related activities. The internet penetrates people's lives with news, entertainment, online shopping, work, and education. Most people, especially e-households in Taobao villages, perceive their social status as equal or higher compared with 5 years ago, and they believe they have equal or even higher social status 2 years in the future. E-households are richer than other households. Business income, including e-commerce income, is the main income source of e-households. E-shop owners are younger and more educated than the rest of the population in the village. Many e-shop owners are returned migrants and women. Most e-shops are small. E-shop workers in Taobao villages have wage levels equal to or higher than workers in urban private industries. High cost of online advertisement, tough competition, and lack of skills are considered by e-shop owners the top three obstacles to developing e-commerce. Access to finance remained an important constraint. The majority of e-households have never borrowed for operations or only borrowed from household members, friends, and relatives. For those who borrowed, Ant Financial, followed by banks and other financing platforms, are important sources of financing. Many anecdotal cases show that e-commerce play a positive role in people's lives. The future research agenda includes how can e-commerce development be furthered as an instrument for poverty reduction and shared prosperity? How can the lessons of rural China be used to inspire other countries to seek unconventional solutions and a wider set of partners to tackle persistent challenges?
My name is James Robson, and I'm the Victor and William Fung Director of the Harvard Asia Center. I'd like to welcome you to the Asia Center's Research Talk Series. The research talks are aimed at showcasing some of the fascinating research that's being done on various facets of Asia by Harvard students, graduate students, faculty, Asia Center affiliates, and other specialists. We very much hope you enjoyed learning from these talks.
Hi, everybody. My broad interest is on entrepreneurship and what impact it can have on growth and inequality, which naturally means my curiosity is much more on developing countries and specifically on China. My more recent research curiosity is essentially to inquire on what role can technology play in promoting grassroots type of entrepreneurship for growth and development. One of the most promising areas of interest in entrepreneurship is that of entrepreneurial ecosystems. It holds interest not only for academics, but also from policymakers because of the promise that entrepreneurial ecosystems hold for promoting a dynamic, sustainable economic growth. An entrepreneurial ecosystem comprises of individual elements which combine and interact in complex ways, and together these elements turbocharge venture creation and growth. With their promise of growth and job creation, naturally, entrepreneurial ecosystems have attracted the attention of government and local authorities worldwide, and it enjoys a huge amount of public support. My current research addresses two concerns within the field of entrepreneurial ecosystems. First, I try to address a general bias in the entrepreneurship literature given its focus, its Western-centric focus. This is true not only for entrepreneurship in general, but also for entrepreneurial ecosystems, which has largely held up a Silicon Valley type of growth as its model. Recently, authors have stressed the importance of studying entrepreneurship phenomenon in emerging countries, and as it is one of the most understudied but important global economic phenomenon today. Second, technology has become one of the threads from which the fabric of organization is now woven. And while digital technologies are shaping entrepreneurial opportunities, decisions, actions, and outcome, the question is, what role does it play in promoting entrepreneurial ecosystems? The phenomenon that I focus now in my ongoing research is that of Taobao villages in China, with the accelerated penetration of high-speed internet in rural China. A new and distinct entrepreneurial phenomenon has risen from within rural China, which is largely considered or baptized as the Taobao villages. The exponential growth of China's e-commerce has enabled the Chinese not only to buy online, but platforms like Taobao.com, which is owned by Alibaba, have also created new opportunities for entrepreneurs and small firms to sell their products and often services online. Opening up an online store entails no fees, nor do platforms take any cuts from the online transactions, unlike, for example, Amazon. Rural Chinese have leveraged this digital phenomenon to sell, and thus the phenomenon of Taobao villages have quickly flourished. Ali Research, the Taobao arm of Alibaba Group, considers Taobao villages as those where at least 10% of the households in a village engage in e-commerce and have annual online sales of at least 10 million yuan, which is approximately $1.5 million. The concept of Taobao villages first appeared about 12 years back when it was decided what criteria has to be met. Soon, entrepreneurs, mostly farmers, leveraged their technology to sell their products online. Taobao villages quickly diffused across the country. The Taobao villages exploited economies of agglomeration, and sellers from Taobao villages became even more competitive on e-commerce platforms. An associated phenomenon is that of Taobao towns, which quickly emerged, which is a township or street that consists of at least three such Taobao villages. A larger agglomeration of Taobao towns form the Taobao village clusters. When there exists a cluster of more than 10 neighboring Taobao villages that together practice e-commerce, and entrepreneurs leverage the Taobao Alibaba platform to sell the products and services. So this phenomenon, which is about 12 years or 13 years old, has having a transformative effect in rural China. The number of Taobao villages and Taobao towns in China rose to more than 5,400 from about 1,756, about 20-25% over the previous years. China's one village, one product policy, ongoing since 2007, had earlier laid the foundations of specialization, encouraging every village to develop locally distinguishable products. This story can be traced, the phenomenon of Taobao villages can be traced down to one village, the Dongwang village in Shaji town, which was the first rural village to take up e-commerce on a large scale. Shaji is a small town of a population of about 50,000, located in Jiangsu province. In 2010, the Alibaba research team was surprised when a large dot showed up in their visualization map, which showed a strong e-commerce activity. They went down to verify, and they found a very interesting phenomenon. But it started with just one entrepreneur, a Shaji native, San Han, left his village to study and ended up working on several jobs before deciding to come back to his hometown. In 2006, he bought a computer and opened the first online Taobao shop in the town, reselling mobile phone accessories, which were sourced from his friends he had made in Guangzhou. Although the business was not going so well, he became inspired from a visit to an IKEA store in Shanghai, where flat-pack furniture was becoming popular among the emerging middle class in China. He bought a few pieces and brought them back to Shaji. He then worked with local carpenters to craft their own furniture versions and put them on sale in his Taobao shop. In a very short period of time, sales boomed, requiring him to hire other villagers. Inspired by their success, other villagers imitated, and eventually they started opening up their own e-commerce stores, mostly based on furniture. There are many such examples showing how e-commerce has allowed locals to build their own profitable business. For example, Mrs. Kai, also from Shaji, a peasant in a poor village, she became a restaurant owner in just 10 years, a very successful one at that. This was possible due to the engagement in e-commerce for furniture, which she got through a cousin. She worked with other people before she opened up her own Taobao store. Her business grew to have 30 employees and about millions of RMB in revenue. She was unable to buy two houses to allow her son to have a good education and open up her own restaurant. This is just one of thousands of examples spread throughout rural China, where the abundance of open technology platforms and collaborations among villagers are changing the lives of millions. So what's happening? One person, then neighbors, then the whole village, and then a cluster of villages and towns. Alibaba and Taobao are changing rural China the ways many of us do not know. It's a bottom-up model. In entrepreneurial ecosystems, we speak about the strong role of the government, where the government is a promoter. This is not the case. It's these small entrepreneurs from rural villages who are selling, often using live stream to promote their goods and services. Second, it's an emergence of an ecosystem of varied actors for delivery, website creation, packaging, logistics, and so on. Third, there are low barriers and inspiration is taken and not just imitation, which follows a certain pattern, and very soon villages start to specialize. Fourth, the government's role here is as a facilitator of providing good quality infrastructure, roads, electricity, telecoms, and so on. Fifth, with the annual transaction volume of Taobao villages and Taobao town online exceeding RMB 1 trillion, more migrant workers are returning to their hometown to start their own businesses. Sixth, with close to 3 million online stores creating over 8.2 million jobs, it's transforming rural villages. More than 50% of Taobao villages are located in western and central China, where much of the poorer people in China live. Seventh, the wide coverage of digital infrastructure has made available new jobs and entrepreneurship opportunities for marginalized people in remote mountainous areas during the pandemic. This is a work in progress. I have collected quite a lot of information and data via secondary sources and some interviews. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic, I have not been able to visit many more villages than I want to. Hopefully, when China opens up for tourists and researchers, my work will continue next year. And it's a work in progress. And I like to show through my research how entrepreneurial ecosystems are transforming the lives of poor people in ways nobody would have imagined. And digital infrastructure provided the affordance for such a transformation. Thank you so much.
You mentioned Taobao a couple of times too. So tell us a little bit about that and how they came to be and how Alibaba played a part in that.
Well, so Taobao was really the retail e-commerce arm of Alibaba Group. And it was started initially because of the fear that, eBay, if they came into the China market, they would really not only take the consumer marketplace, but they might actually move into other areas that were competitive with Alibaba Group. More importantly was the realization that the Chinese consumers did not have access to products that the rest of the world did because they had such a rudimentary retail, like I talked about earlier, infrastructure system. So I think a big driver too, beyond just the competitive aspects, was that consumers in China had curiosity and desire to access products from all over the world, but they weren't able to do that through the traditional means. So how do we actually give them access to that through the internet? And one of the things that people always talk about at eBay is that they had 95% market share at the time that Taobao got started. That's true if you look at the addressable market that was already online and already purchasing products. But if you look at the addressable market, which was 90, so that's probably like 3 to 4 million, I guess, at that time. But if you look at the addressable market that was already online in, say, 2003, 2004, it was like 90 million, okay? And you could say, well, that's the market that we're trying to address and provide them access to these products. But if you take a step back further and say, no, actually, the addressable market is not just those who are online, but actually the entire sort of retail market, that was at the time like 800 million. And so what Taobao really thought about is how do we serve this 700-800 million people that want access to all these products but don't know how to find it? That's what we're creating for them. And that marketing approach was dramatically different from what you would do if you were like just competing with eBay. We actually used the same process we did with B2B, educate the market through very traditional means. Like we'd have seminars, we'd do a lot of offline stuff to kind of educate the normal Chinese consumer that Taobao was the place to find anything from anywhere. And you can do that all through your internet. So in a way, we drove the adoption and the use of the internet for retail consumption.
How is it doing today?
Oh, so today it's like over a billion users and over $1 trillion in gross merchandise value. So it's by far the largest in the world. And that, again, is the result of kind of this evolution of this ecosystem that, Alibaba Group really helped to catalyze.
You must be familiar with Taobao, Chinese online shopping website, and one of the largest e-commerce websites in the world. But do you know Taobao Village? Who are the merchants? What do they sell? And how do they sell? Now I'm in Xichenbo Village, one of the Taobao villages in Suning County, and they're selling fishing gears.
因为我们这个镇本身就是有做玉哥的这个传统的这个产业，所以呢，当时我们就选取了玉哥。当时呢，因为我们家2012年做了之后呢，当时开了一个店铺，接着呢，两个、三个，那生意做好了之后呢，那需要的人也就多了，所以说我们附近离着就村民呢，我就叫过他们来，来给帮忙了。一个是收入比他种的还多呢。
Live streaming. Actually, I'm not surprised to see this in Taobao Village since it has played such an important role in e-commerce, especially during the epidemic.
Can I have a try?
According to the Alibaba Research Institute, a Taobao village is one that has annual e-commerce sales of at least 10 million yuan, or at least 100 active online stores, or whose active online stores account for at least 10% of the total village households. This is a local brand of fishing gears in Hanan Village.
咱们这个一般这一个月销量得有多少啊？
现在一个月的销量就是这款鱼竿单品的话，应该在70,000只左右。
就这一款就70,000只。
哎，对，是的，是的，在咱们当地这个村子里面吧，有90%的人都在从事电商、淘宝这一块。咱们现在这个厂子里面的所有的工人都是咱们当地人，100%是咱们当地人。很重要的一点是，如果说在咱们当地上班，在挣的钱差不多的前提下，他能守着自己的家里人，守着自己的孩子，这对于他们来说，这是一种享受，我感觉。
嗯。In the village, we can see that almost all businesses are operated by family members or neighbors. They build their factory here and they just work from home. It's at such a low budget. Besides veggies and other agricultural products, they also sell clothes here in Taobao Village.
Because our region is quite developed, our employees are from the surrounding areas. They don't need to go out.在家门口就能挣到钱。
This whole building is designed for live stream. They're doing live stream in each room to sell their products, clothes, t-shirt, hoodie online. Let's have a look. Because of these Taobao villages here, they have such a big delivery center to support the package express service in Suning County. In the next 10 years, it's estimated that there will be more than 20,000 Taobao villages across the country, creating more than 20 million job opportunities to attract more young people to their hometowns to start businesses.
Okay, well, now Taobao villages, like I say, they're in China, but the meat of the concept has been around for a while. If you go online, and speaking to the United States audience, and just type in any search engine, map of Amish towns.Or map of Amish villages, or Mennonite, either one of those, and you'll see, like I'm reading here, there are at least 589 total Amish settlements of villages, excuse me, in the United States. That's the United States. All right, 589. It's probably more than that, but...That's what I'm getting here online. If you go to Mennonites, they have a map. And Mennonites, man, they have villages and towns in Canada, the United States, Mexico, the entire Western Hemisphere. They got a bunch of them in Africa. A handful in Europe, China, India, India, and other parts of India, South Asia. Let me get bigger here. All right, they've got them. You have Mennonites. Now, Mennonites and Germans share the root of those cultures of people are German.All right, so you have them in Australia, the Philippines, Vietnam, do they have them in Laos? Kenya, Uganda, I mean Burundi, Togo, Benin, Nigeria. They go to places where there's low government regulation, but you got a rack full of them here in the United States. But where the action is, okay, is you have to rural man. Next week, I mean, every week we're going to cover at least one podcast dedicated towards rural e-commerce. That's what's happening. Let the big cities like New York, Chicago, Miami, Orlando, San Francisco, Seattle, leave all that to the big boys on Wall Street. They can have that. They can have that. Where the ball is, where the ball is going for the little guy is rural e-commerce. And that's why we introduced the Taobao Villages yesterday and today. And we covered for the last 2 years on November the 11th, and to tell you how popular it is, that's Singles Day in China, and where they take in trillions, if not billions of dollars on that. So, and just on an end note here, Yoder, Kansas, Y-O-D-E-R, Yoder, Kansas, is an Amish town, has a population of, some say 165 people, some say 44 people. For the sake of this conversation, we'll go with the 165. That's what they have on Wikipedia. And Yoder is basically a town of entrepreneurs. And if you really want to get an education, because I have not come across not one Amish person who has written a book about the Amish economy. Not one. Not to say there isn't any. I haven't run across any. Now, there's some people that are outsiders looking in that have written books. But, you know, they don't go around giving seminars. They're not like Grant Cardone, Robert Kiyosaki. You know, you're not going to catch them writing a book, giving a webinar, or nothing like this. If you want to get up close and personal to them, there's a map online. There are maps online. Pick out an Amish and or Mennonite community near you, or even Hutterites. They're all related. They're all cousins. And go visit their town. Typically, those communities have farmers markets, because a lot of them, man, they don't do anything sexy as far as businesses go. And I'm not talking about sex with sexy. You know, nothing bright and shiny, just bare bones fundamentals, farming, fence building businesses, barn building businesses, some might even build a small motel for you, sheds, baked goods, you know, rolls, shoe fly pies, quilts, bedding, cords of wood that they'll chop and sell to you. Just basic businesses that have worked for thousands of years. The Amish are really not into too much of modern technology. I understand some have gone solar, you know, with the solar panels. Mennonites, though, they've gone solar. Many of them gone solar. They have their smartphones and whatnot. So, and a lot of these places, man, two or three people might start a village. And a lot of those villages might, you know, some might have 20 people, some might have 50 people, but we're talking about small
numbers. But like I say, it that's in China. But the world e-commerce, start studying that. And like I say, the Mennonites, the Amish, the Hutterites, and others, you know, if you're in New York City, Chicago, any of these big metro areas where your overhead is high and you got to pull a permit, man, one day you might need a permit to take a dump on your own toilet in your house. Okay? I was talking to somebody in Chicago yesterday. They had to go pull a permit to put a gate on a fence. The fence is already built in their backyard. That's in Chicago. However, if you drive 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour outside of Chicago in the rural areas or the rural counties, it's a different ball game. So, rural e-commerce, matter of fact, before I go to the phone lines here, and I'm glad I started buying rural land. Matter of fact, I never even heard of the term rural e-commerce until yesterday. All right. And I got stuff from rural areas. All right. Rural e-commerce in rural areas. Okay, here we go here. Oh, speaking of which, I got a phone call. Not a phone call. I got a DM on Facebook on one of my Facebook friends that I know them boots on the ground. They live in Asia. And they were asking me, how far am I from Big Fork? Matter of fact, hold on, let me read you the DM as I got it. Okay. So this is about 2 hours ago. Okay. So I had chatted with him. You know, I sent him a note yesterday. What's new? So they're 12 hours ahead of me. So they responded, hi, how are you? They say hi. He said hi. How far are you from Big Fork? And then I responded, Big Fork, with a bunch of question marks behind it. Big Fork where? I'm in Florida. So I said, what state? He got back to me in a DM. Big Fork, Montana. That's over 2,000 miles away from where I'm at right now. And now, mind you, they're in Southeast Asia. They're looking at, they found something online via e-commerce, a Ford pickup truck. What are you looking at? A Ford. All right. Somebody is selling a Ford F-150 for $5,000. So I said, well, you know, you got to figure in shipping too. And she already figured that out. He checked that out. He said, even with the $5,000 and $10,000 total, still cheaper to buy it in the United States, at least this, and then have it shipped to where they're at in Southeast Asia. And I got to thinking about, because I'm not in auto business or nothing like that, but man, this might be a new side hustle for me. Just saying. But so that's the power of rural, because Big Fork, Montana, has a population at a little bit over 5,000 people. Something like 51. Matter of fact, let me look it up. Big Fork, Montana, has a population of. And man, that's a bare minimum. Because the way I do a road trip like that, I start out in the morning, and then I drive till the sun starts to go down. I pull off the highway before dark. So Big Fork would probably take me, if I'm doing it solo, 2 days. Well, 2.5 days. You know what? Even if I was driving with somebody, no, we're pulling in at night. We're pulling in at night. But it's a drive. Let's see, Big Fork, Big Fork, Montana. Oh, wait a minute. Well, anyway, it's a population of over a little bit over 5,000 people. And I gave you a stat yesterday: 47% of the population of the United States live in towns that have a population of 5,000 people or less. Okay, right. So Big Fork, I'm getting the population for you. Big Fork has a population of 5,118 people. Big Fork qualifies as being in what I call the real United States of America. That's a whole different podcast. Okay. In any event, we'll go. Oh, Rural E-commerce, before I go to the phone, after I get off of this rant. Oh, wait a minute. Rural E-commerce. The immigrants that are in the country, and that will be, continue to get in the country, they're gonna find the rural areas, and do pretty well there. Let's see. Here's an article here. Rural e-commerce brings opportunities. No, hold it. Wait a minute. E-commerce brings opportunities to rural communities. It says rural commercialization continues to grow in Latin America as communities increasingly turn to e-commerce to conduct business and make purchases. In 2020, retail e-commerce sales rose by 63.3% in Latin America alone. Rural opportunities in e-commerce. Consumer market demand is increasing in rural regions. With that comes increased financial inclusion and access to products typically not seen in the region. Social commerce provides an exclusivity for rural communities. Social commerce, that's a new term. I know about social capital, so social commerce is a trend occurring in, hold up, man, I got to look this word up now, social commerce. I can't go a podcast without hearing this, and I'm coming to the phone line. Social commerce. All right, social commerce. Yeah, I'll give you the definition of that. Social commerce is a rapidly growing branch of e-commerce that uses social networks and digital media to facilitate transactions between business and customers. Well, I can tell you this right now. Monday's podcast is titled Social Commerce. It says social commerce is a subset of electronic commerce that involves social media and online media that supports social interactions and user contributions to assist online buying and selling products and services. And Wikipedia has a whole page on this. Advertising, auctions, banking, distribution, food ordering, groceries, marketplace, pharmacy, ride hailing. All right, that's Monday's podcast. All right, I'm not going to read any further today on this, because if I do, I might discover a new word or term. Because like so yesterday, 48 hours ago, I did not know. And as many times as I've been in a rural situation, I've got land in rural locations, I never heard of the term rural e-commerce. But now I know. Now I just ran across this term, social commerce. I've been participating in social commerce and didn't know the term. Now I know. Therefore, Monday. So anyway, let me go to the phone lines. It's 619-768-2945. Press 1-309 area code. Your mic is open. Okay, they might have stepped away for a while. So as far as this goes, that's the way we're going to start operating. We have been, buying some acres here. But now I've got a mile of people to copy off of. Basically, I don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's just, okay, well, how did you start your, village and or town and then exclusively shop, I mean, not shop, but set up shop in areas, like I say, that to give you a scope of this, any and that, all right, let's go through a geography lesson. Always try to equate it to a chessboard. Once again, if you play chess, the chessboard has 64 squares. All right. Take all the players off, take all the pieces off the chessboard. You've got 64 squares, and each square has a name to it. All right. Matter of fact, let me break this down even further. All right, name of spaces on chessboard. So you've got, like, the chessboard, and the chessboard represents the landscape. So when we're talking about business or where you're going to live or a combination of the two, you need to know the landscape first. If you don't know the landscape, you can run into difficulties. Somebody remind me, like the Black Wall Street thing that happened in Oklahoma in 1921. O.W. Gurley, brilliant entrepreneur, but he didn't know, I'm putting this in chessboard terms, the landscape. So let's get the fundamentals here with chess. All right. Out of 64 squares, you have a row of squares. You have a row of eight that are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Row one, row two, all the way up to eight. So you got eight rows of numbers. And then you have another eight rows of the alphabet. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. All right, so there's A1, B1, C1, D1, 6-1, F1, G1, H1. It's like that all the way up to the eighth row, which is A8, B8, all the way to H8. That's the landscape. If you know the landscape well, because there's some people play a game, a version of chess called blind chess, where they're blindfolded. They're blindfolded. And if they know what move you made and they remember what move they make, there are people, there are grandmasters of chess that can play blind chess, that can beat several people without blinders on, and they can beat them in chess because they know the landscape that well. The same thing applies to real life. Now, since let me think about, say this while I got it on my mind. Black Wall Street. Now, a lot of people talk about, you know, it happened in 1921, and, you know, black people got victimized and all that. Let's look at the landscape of this. O.W. Gurley, a black entrepreneur, bought 40 acres of land in Tulsa, Oklahoma. At the time that he bought it, now the idea, his vision was very good. And he built the vision. But then something happened where it got destroyed by fire, race riots, and all that. Now, what people don't tell you, now this is where chess comes in at, and rural e-commerce comes in too. At this, when all that happened for Black Wall Street, you know, the 40 acres was razed, burnt down. You only have maybe one building standing from that era. There were 50 black municipalities, 50 black townships in the state of Oklahoma at the same time. And there were probably another 50 black townships that were unincorporated throughout the state of Oklahoma at the same time. None of those towns, and I've been to three of them. I've been to Taft, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, and Tallahassee, Oklahoma. None of those towns out of 100 were never had any racial violence. Not one of them. Why? Because the founders of those towns knew the landscape of where the safest places where they can build a township and be left alone. At least that's my version of it. So, in the United States, now let's transfer this to in the United States. You have the cost of living. Now, well, first thing before we get to that, you have 50 states. All 50 states are made up of counties or a county equivalent. Like in Louisiana, they don't have counties. They're county equivalent or parishes. In Alaska, their county equivalent are called boroughs. But everybody else, they have the county system. So there are over 3,000 counties in the United States. Out of that, you have over 330 million people. 86% of that figure only occupies 3% of the land mass. On a chessboard, that's a square and a half out of 64 squares. So you got all these people occupying 3% of the land mass. And economics 101, supply and demand. You know, when you got a whole bunch of people crowded in Chicago and Los Angeles, or Miami, or Orlando, or Seattle, the price goes up, supply and demand. 97% of the United States is rural. Only 14% of the population lives, they're spread out among the 97%, which is rural. So, and 47% of the population in the United States live in towns that have a population of 5,000 people or less. That's the gateway, or what I consider the gateway of the real United States of America. Because if you're living, live as close as you can, like the signers of the Declaration of Independence. On July 4, 1776, there was no such thing is a building permit to build a house. In 1776, well, plumbing was rudimentary back then, but you didn't need to pull a permit for plumbing. There was no electricity that was invented by, I mean, that was harnessed by a man at that point. So, you know, there were candles back then and oil lamps. So you didn't have to pull a permit for any of that. To put a fence around your property back then, you didn't need to do that. You can't do that now in the United States. Not in the big cities, you can't. However, if you go to the unincorporated communities in the United States, look it up online. Pick your state, unincorporated towns, pick whatever state you want to. Now, here's where what I call the real United States of America. California has over 1,000 towns or communities that are unincorporated. They typically don't have a police force because they don't need one. They might have a volunteer fire department, but that's run by volunteers. And in many of these places, you don't have to pull a permit to build your house. If you want to chop down a tree on your own land, you don't need to pull a permit. I was talking to a friend of mine. This is up in the Washington, D.C. area. Somebody wanted to chop down a tree in their backyard, and the permit costs over $1,000. The permit to chop down a tree in your own backyard, I'm not even including what the contractor would cost to cut down a tree, because it was a big tree, and they just didn't have the resource or the skill set to cut that big tree down. But the permit costs $1,000. However, if you go to Frostburg Falls, Minnesota, you don't have to do that. So, and I guess God was God my way, because the land I've picked up so far is unrestricted, which means other than a septic tank for every 5 acres, I can do what I want to do. And in another place, well, if I decide to build what they define as a house, it's got to be a minimum of 480 square feet. And I can't have any pigs there, but I can have any other kind of animal I want, cows, horses. But I'm not in the animal husbandry, but I'm just saying. So now, with that said, you got 3,000 counties out of the 50 states, and then I'm doing a count this weekend because there are 8 states that there are no unincorporated areas. There are 8 of them. Most of them in the northeast area of the United States, like Pennsylvania, doesn't have any unincorporated towns. Massachusetts doesn't have any. I think Vermont doesn't have any. So there are 48 states where the action is, where the real United States is in the 48 states that have unincorporated communities. California has 1,000 or more. Illinois has 1,000 or more. What's another state that has 1,000? All right. What do you call it? What's the name of it? Oh, Tennessee has 800. So if you're retired, lived on a fixed income, want to get ahead of the games, just starting out, find you an unincorporated town to live in, where your taxes will be lower, your cost of living will be lower. And most of these places are not remote. A lot of these places, a 10-minute drive, a 20-minute drive, some cases an hour drive. In other cases, it might be an hour and a half drive. But they got all, your Walmart. any place where you want to go spend money, these places are available. Okay. So, there you have it on the landscape. And, Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am here, sir.
Okay, his mic is open. Oh, okay.
I'm here.
All right, so, Mike, I'm getting off my soapbox. Yeah, I'm off my soapbox now, so the floor is yours.
Oh, that's all right. Your soapbox is all kinds of information, brother. I have no problem getting back to this one for that. You know, when it was started out here by the eBay of China, and then, you know, of course, they're looking at how can they get the billion people that are wanting these products and services, and how do they get it? And they build it. And
okay, I can't.
Oh, now I can hear you.
I can hear you now.
All right, I took off my headset, so maybe you can hear me a whole lot better now. You know, China.
Yeah, that's better.
Tivo,
that's better. Yeah.
Is it Timu? You know, that right there.
Well, it's Tivo. But basically, Taobao. That's a website, Taobao.com. And basically, you can do the same thing. In other words, these villagers, basically, they're selling a lot of their wares through that one particular website. They're not restricted to that. But it's the same thing if we decided to, you know, eBay Village or Facebook Marketplace Village. You know, the villagers got together and said, all right, we got these business ideas, we got these businesses that exist, and let's sell them online. And that's what they've been doing, and they've been pretty successful at it. Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, here they're selling $1 trillion a year.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's amazing on what it is that the whole world, even China's set up on service industry because they service the world. They send us all our products. They do all everything that we got too lazy to do. They took over and says, okay, we'll take your money too. And,
right.
And they've done that. And they monopolized where we were, instead of creating the monopoly like the game, we were playing the game and buying their game, Milton Bradley's Monopoly. And it was being made in China, and they made more money on it selling that game than it would cost us to end hunger in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how stupid we are, truly. So I'm sitting here loving the fact that I'm watching people actually do things. Now, by them doing what they're doing, it's giving us the education to actually, hey, why can't we do it? And we can do it. Repetition is what works.
Right.
And, you know, I'm happy. I was working with a preacher in Little Rock and last year, and they called me the other day, and they're getting two duplexes started. And they're 1,250 square feet, 1,200 square feet each. Two bedrooms. But they have 6 acres to do, but they're doing affordable housing, and they want to develop it all. So happy to see that coming together as well.
Now, Chris, you're out in, Bloomington, Illinois.
Correct.
And it sounds like, well, you got some acres there. Now, is the city that you're in or the county, is it rural? I'm taking for granted it's rural.
Actually, no. Where I'm at here is not rural. I'm in the middle of you know, a little city with a couple hundred thousand people. You know, I got State Farm here. I got Illinois State University, Nestle Bike, Country Companies, Beer Nuts. These are all companies that started right here in this town, and they're international.
Oh, okay.
you know. So yeah, this is actually a wealthy little place right here. They're just very educated, very, very educated, but to me they're so educated they're ignorant because they're not using common sense and fixing the issues that are at hand, because they really, once they go home and they shut their doors, they don't have those issues to deal with, and they're not worried about them until it affects them directly. So that's why here it's been such a struggle. But today was a nice day. I go down to the city and I find out that they still hadn't sent me my okay to build that 40,000 square foot Airbnb. That's supposed to be an email to me here in a few minutes. So as soon as they email that to me, we're going to work on getting the building permit. So I've met all their requirements, and I showed them the conceptual this morning, and he says, "You mean I didn't get that for you? You know, I didn't see that for you." I said, "No, well, let's look. Here's my email." So I said, "What's your email?" And he tells me, and I start typing it in, and I said, "It don't look like you emailed me." And he says, "Man, I am so sorry." So this is just another part. They've left us a little bit waiting, but we got it. Now I'm happy, you know. I'm getting to move forward on that. And Illinois State University said yes. So on working with us to do the agriculture parts of that. And right now I'm putting a roof on a house, and the homeowner's walking up to me, so I'm going to go on mute for a moment. I'm going to speak with him.
Okay. All right, well, we're about to wrap it up anyway. So I'll just say have a good day. I'll probably call you over the weekend. And Monday, what's this? Social commerce. That's the topic. Unless something comes up better than that, social commerce, because it will be a continuation of rural e-commerce, because that's the business that we're in, rural e-commerce, and how all that's set up. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.